Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Trance. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can get your thoughts about the upcoming series. For first time since 1992 that the Canucks and the Edmonton Oilers are going to meet in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Gets going Wednesday night at Rogers Arena, and I have a feeling the crowd is going to be moderately fired up for that one with Connor McDavid in the house in the Stanley Cup playoffs in the second round. Lots of texts coming in here, people offering their ideas on what they need to do or what the Canucks need to do to pull off the upset. Gary and Terrace says, hey guys, the Canucks will win if Shelov stays calm, makes saves, and steals a game or two. Hashtag tall order. Go Canucks, go. That's from Gary in Terrace. Big Mac Ian says, Canucks need to play a frustrating defensive game, which they did to perfection versus the Predators, and the big Edmonton oil machine will self-destruct like a Chrysler 8-cylinder. That's from Ian, trying to get the Oilers to self-destruct.
I mean, there's definitely an element to that. We've seen this Oilers 100%. Team lose their cool against this Canucks team.
Mm-hmm.
So, for sure, if you're able to press that advantage and have things going against the Oilers and have, you know, your Nurse, your Kane, your Dreisaitl tier guys, your Perry tier guys, you know, running around a bit, yeah.
Getting frustrated, yeah, losing their cool in the series, right?
That's definitely part of what you want from, like, the underdog series winning script.
It's such a fine line to walk between getting under those guys' skin and trying to bait them into it, or at least provoke them into stuff like that, while also remaining hyper-disciplined. Like,
right.
That's a really, really tough task, a tall order, as the texter says.
Because, again, you drawing penalties is also going to result in you having more called against you.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want this series to be decided 5-on-4. Either way.
That is a flip side, though, of we're all talking about the Canucks need to be disciplined. They need to limit the opportunities for the Oilers' power play. They need to, you know, just hold on for dear life and do their best.
They also need their power play.
Their power play needs to play well. Yeah. Their power play needs, like, because, you know, probably power play opportunities will be, like, roughly even in the series. You know, maybe they'll lean one way a little bit, but you're only going to limit the Oilers' power play so much. Like, yours, it doesn't necessarily need to keep pace with them, but it needs to keep it close. The margin can't be completely skewed. It can't be completely out of control. Part of that's your penalty kill, but part of that is the power play as well for the Canucks, and it needs to look a lot better than it did outside of Game 3 in that Nashville series.
Yeah, yeah. And right now, the Canucks' power play just, like, it feels like they're dangerous with Miller going downhill.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd imagine the Oilers won't make the mistake the Predators did and play a wedge plus one. Like, I'd imagine
they won't invite that from JT Miller.
Yeah, I'd imagine they won't be quite so narrow in terms of their alignment. And I think Miller going downhill is still super dangerous. Everything else the Canucks have done on the power play just looks kind of turgid, frankly.
Well, I mean, the entries in Game 5 were just brutal. Like, there were none to speak of. There were very few successful entries to speak of, right? And that don't need to be, an X's and O's guy or a crack hockey analyst to know that that's going to give you problems scoring on the power play if you can't even control it into the zone.
I should have brought this up, but one other thing that I think is something of an X factor for the Canucks here is if you...
What? Sorry, I'm just like, you're like, oh, I should have brought this up. It's like, we got an hour left in the show, buddy. You're in luck.
You've been
given a second chance.
I should have brought this up. I wanted to make sure I got through my list.
Okay.
But we got a text in. Nils Höglander is my X factor. I want to see him pissing guys off, says Clay. Fair. Höglander can definitely...
He's good at that.
Although he needs to play in a way that he gets enough minutes to mm-hmm. actually impact the series. Because right now, it's hard to piss a guy off if they can respond to you with, like, you know, you're at fantasy camp, you're not playing, you're not impactful in this series. You know, like, you need to be, you can't be the villain.
You can't be a complete bit part.
No, you can't be the villain if you're not also capable of ripping the other team's heart out. You know what I mean? Like, you need to be able to... That's what made Zadorov so compelling the last round. It wasn't just the hits or the talk or, you know, the Bond villain double-breasted suits. It was the fact that he was making a huge impact on the games, right? That he was scoring big goals.
He's backing it up.
Yeah. And so that's a big part. Now, here's my pick for Canucks X Factor. Because if you watch that Kings series, there were two players that the Oilers' defense seemed to have some issues defending, containing, who were able to pretty consistently frustrate the Edmonton Oilers' defenders. And it was Blake Lizotte and Victor Arvidsson. Quick, little dudes with enough skill to make you pay. Who matches that description?
Nils Höglander.
Connor Garland!
Connor Garland also.
Because Connor Garland's going to play!
No, okay, yes, I see what you're saying, but like Nils Höglander has to play him, has to make himself playable.
He does.
Like, he needs to get third line deployment. If he's going to be in that position with Elias Pettersson, we're talking about Elias Pettersson needing to have an impact, undeniably true, but Nils Höglander needs to make the most of that opportunity, right? He's got to earn a regular shift playing alongside Elias Pettersson, which he didn't do against Nashville in the first round. Like, Rick Tocchet couldn't put him out there for a regular shift. Didn't trust him enough. That's got to change. I take your point about Connor Garland. Like, he's the guy who's definitely going to play. We saw what he can do even against Nashville as a playmaker.
With those download, yeah.
We've seen it all year.
But he was a big game breaker for the Canucks in that first round series. And I think he's got the chops to significantly frustrate, annoy, be very difficult for the Oilers' big-bodied, slightly slower defense core to like actually contain, right? Garland just makes you work so hard for every inch of ice. Like, even if he doesn't win the battle,
and you can't get him off the puck.
No, it's his low center of gravity and everything he does just looks annoying to play against in defense.
Well, that's what I mean. And if we're talking about what can frustrate the opponent the most, like, yes, getting leveled by Nikita Zadorov, very frustrating. All of the, you know, JT Miller bowling to the net, right? And taking a defenseman out, very frustrating. But like a 5'8" guy first just being a complete beast on the boards, and you're, you know, Darnell Nurse or whoever, and you're massive, you've got this huge height and weight advantage, and yet you cannot get the puck off him. Like, that sounds about as frustrating as it gets 100%. On an NHL ice surface, right? And he's so good at winning those battles, and once he wins the battles, like, keeping the puck until something develops for him in front of the net.
So honestly for me, I'm looking at Garland as a player who needs to have a huge impact on this series. Like, a world where the Canucks win is a world where he's had a big series, in my view.
Yeah, and I would say Garland, and I would really throw that whole line into it, right? Like, if they need to control play, I mean, look, it's hard. It's going to be hard to do that if they're matched up against Leon Draisaitl or the Connor McDavid line. But, you know, Dakota Joshua had that massive game one for the Canucks, right? Scoring the key goal, empty netter, an assist on it as well. Didn't have a strong series, I didn't think, after that, right? And part of that is that line, in general, you know, didn't necessarily have as much of the puck as we're used to them seeing, but Joshua was making some sloppy plays, giving pucks away in the neutral zone. Garland is the guy I think you still feel most confident about what game you're going to get night to night on that line, but that line as a unit is going to have a big role in this series, right? For the depth scoring part, the matchup part, all of it.
I didn't love the Garland line's game. Just like generally, I didn't love the way that line played in the first round. They came through in some significant moments, but I'm so used to seeing the Garland Joshua duo just like stack up heavy shifts like it's their job, which I guess it kind of is. And that just didn't happen, right? Like, that line was outscored. They were outshot in that series, and that's such a massive... Yes, they were soft matched against the O'Reilly line, crucial context, but that's such a massive departure from what it looked like for them all year long. And I do think this team's going to need, especially if that's like a Draisaitl soft match, like that line needs to be playing, you know, you want to frustrate the Draisaitl Kane line. Like, there's some combustible personalities on that line.
Mm-hmm.
You want to frustrate them. Like, you're going to need to make them play without the puck a fair bit. And this line, you know, they should be capable of it. For whatever reason, we just haven't seen it with Lindholm in the middle. And I don't really know how to explain it, because I'm watching Lindholm like play without the puck in the neutral zone, the way he kind of like harasses and herds puck carriers. And I'm like, that looks great. I see him on the PK and I'm like, man, this guy's an ace. Like, this might be the reason why Vancouver's penalty kill has a puncher's chance in this series. And then at 5-on-5, I don't know why, but it just, like, it looks to me like it hasn't quite worked.
No, I don't think that's a hot take. Again, other than the moments, it hasn't looked the same as it did with Teddy Bluger. And I think what you're getting at, which is kind of the weird thing, I don't know if there's one thing you can point to that Elias Lindholm, like, isn't doing, or, you know what I mean, that Teddy Bluger was. It's not that clear. It's just sometimes chemistry is a funny thing like that, right? It's just not working in the same way. And I don't think it's, like, Lindholm's fault.
No.
It just hasn't clicked to that level that we've seen it be capable of earlier in the
year. The only thing I can think of to explain it is the righty-lefty thing. And there were, like, the game one before Lindholm scored, there was, like, a quick sort of partial rush chance. It was really a two-on-two. And Garland's threaded, like, a really nice cross-ice pass. And Lindholm just couldn't get to it where a lefty almost surely would. You know, like, that's the only thing I can think of, but it matters in small moments. I struggle to imagine that it's why they're not driving play as a line, because they need a lefty at center. Like, that doesn't quite track for me.
It would be a little surprising if that's what it came down to.
So, I don't know. That line needs to be big, but Garland, I think, profiles as exactly the type of forward that the Oilers' defense can struggle to contain.
By the way, we do have one very dedicated texter, and I don't have his name handy, but he texts in a lot saying that they have to put Teddy Bluger back between those two. And look, I understand why Rick Tocchet didn't switch up the lines at any point in the Nashville series, right? Because they were leading for the after game three, they were leading for the whole series. You know, their backs were never against the wall. I completely understand that. Now you're, you know, the opponent gets that much tougher. You're that much farther into the playoffs. I think the tipping point for making changes could come much sooner, right? So I think it's this kind of thing where it's like game one, even middle of game one, if you're not getting the results in your matchups, then yeah, it absolutely is time to, okay, do we have to put Bluger back there, right? Not saying that it's Lindholm's fault and who knows what this means for the rest of the lines, but do we have to give them a chance to kind of reestablish that chemistry? I think that becomes a much more legitimate talking point, or could at least in a hurry, depending on how the early results go in this game, right? Like this is crunch time. It's a new series now, so I don't know how much you can use the reasons for not making changes from the National Series. I don't know how much they extend to a new series against Edmonton. I think it's kind of a fresh slate in good ways and potentially bad ways.
Well, Tocchet hasn't changed anything. Oh, playoffs. Like, Juulsen's come in for Myers, and Lafferty got
bumped down, and McKayev got bumped up. Since then, it's been status quo.
And occasionally, he's loaded up the lotto line in-game, mm-hmm. and Bluger plays more when they're holding leads. Like, that's it. You know, it's... Now, one thing that's been sort of funny, and we do this... This is like evergreen sports talk content in this market is... What should the lines be? Let's trot out some combinations, right? Like, we love a practice where you think the lines might get changed, right? That's like manna from heaven. But the, like, I don't know, there aren't a lot of buttons to push.
No. And I wonder if it comes down more to, rather than, as you say, that moment where at practice Batch tweets the lines out, or you do, and it's, you know, completely different, and there's a firestorm, like, wow, he's really changing things up. I think it's going to be less that, or could be less that, and more situational in games, right? Like we saw with the lotto line, but even amping that up more, where you're finding the guys you rely on in certain roles, and you're kind of mixing and matching within the flow of a game to get everyone the minutes they need. Because as you said, okay, Ilya Mikheyev is really frustrating. Well, who's the other option there? Sam Lafferty? You've already tried that. It didn't look great. You know what I mean? There's only so many certain combinations you can go to try to fix that problem. And that's not even getting into any of the other ones. So I think it might just be a case of, okay, Elias Pettersson with the lotto line. Maybe, I don't know, do you put Pettersson out there for a shift with Joshua and Garland here or there without making it a full-time change to the lines?
Yeah. The only thing that I'd be interested in seeing is like a break glass in case of emergency combo is... If I'm right about the Oilers struggling against, like, puck-protecting, skilled little guys, like, if that's... If something that I thought was really prominent in that Kings series translates to this series, is there a break glass in case of emergency line that you could deploy where Garland joins Hoglander and Pettersson?
Ooh.
Which we saw in the regular season. Remember, I was so excited when I thought the Canucks figured out their top six?
Yes, and it was Suter with Miller and Besser, which is maintained.
Stuck with.
And those guys, you're right.
But it was because Joshua was out. The moment Joshua came back, it was Joshua Garland, right? But I still liked a lot of what we saw, and I still like the idea of giving Pettersson some help driving, because I think he needs it right now. And you don't have a better driver than Garland as a winger on this team. right? I mean, you have a better driver in Miller and Pettersson when he's healthy, and Hughes and on and on. But like, you when Garland, in terms of a winger who can help modify the environment that a line plays in, like, he's number one. So just as like a break glass in case of emergency option, I'm really curious to see if we get a late season callback to that trio, because I think that could frustrate the Oilers potentially.
I love this text. Get to Foley from the Jets now that they're out. Now, look, if the NHL wanted to boost interest in the playoffs, just trades anytime. Anything goes.
Well, I've always thought what the NHL should have is a loan system.
Mm.
Like, you know, you've got, like, say the Canucks last year, you know, and you're sellers, but you also aren't sellers in perpetuity. You have short-term goals, right? A world where you could sell a JT Miller at the trade deadline as like a 7-month mercenary to go win a cup, but then he remains on your team.
That'd be amazing.
I mean, it would make, I think you'd get more trades, and you'd give more teams like the opportunity to load up, and you'd give more players a chance to compete in the highest stages. Like,
get some experience. That'd be so funny. Oh man. I'm just trying to imagine the reaction, like JT Miller going on loan to the Oilers in the playoffs.
Yeah.
My goodness.
I'm just saying, like, you know, that to me, that would be like a fun way of that. It would be a fun way because the benefit in my view anyway would be like, say you're a veteran player and you're Seth Jones. And it's like you went to Chicago and signed this long term deal. And now it's like this long rebuild that you're settling in for. And it's going to be like, he's going to waste his entire late 20s not getting to play meaningful hockey. Whereas like having Seth Jones and you sell him every year for a second round pick as a rental, it's like good for him, good for you. And by the time you're good again, you'll keep him.
What about if you're a UFA, you're a UFA as soon as your team is eliminated, whether from the regular season or the playoffs. So it's just like, all right, Tyler Toffoli, you're a UFA. You want to join? You want to join up for the playoffs? Someone sign him. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. In terms of forward options, somebody texts in thoughts on having Podkolzin in over Phil DiGiuseppe. Look, Phil DiGiuseppe is in for his role in the penalty kill, and the penalty kill was phenomenal. Arguably the best facet of the Canucks game in round one. So I think anyone who's contributing on that penalty kill is a lock to continue to be in the lineup. And that includes Phil DiGiuseppe, who's been a regular out there on the PK.
The thing about this fourth line, underlying numbers were not pretty in that series. I think the McCarron line played a much larger factor in that series than the Canucks fourth line did. But, you know, I'm talking about the speed of Vancouver's forward group and how I think that could give the Oilers defense real trouble, especially in terms of getting going on the breakout. And one thing about like a Bluger, Lafferty, PDG fourth line is that it allows the Canucks to play like recognizably Canucks hockey even when their stars get a breather. And there's value there, especially if they're not surrendering any goals against, which they didn't in the first round. Like the fourth line came out, I don't think they like set the tone. I'd like to see, like, I'd especially like to see Lafferty play to an identity a little bit more in terms of, like, the physicality.
For sure.
You know, like, we saw it occasionally during the season, like, against the Kings. He had one big game where he was kind of a mean customer. I like that side of his game when it's there. I don't think it's been there consistently enough. And when the bounces aren't going in for him, I feel like he needs just, like, another wrinkle. Like, he's not on the PK. He's not scoring. Like, I think that in-your-face side of his game, the hitting, the using his size, I think that's like an area that I was left a little bit wanting in the first round, and yet I sort of come out of it thinking, okay, well, at the very least, this line has this speed game that allows the Canucks to do what they want to do, even when they don't have, you know, their top six or, you know, even their top nine on the ice. There's value there.
I thought they played totally fine as a fourth line in that series. Like, underlying numbers aren't great, but like it was, I was never like, uh-oh, this line's out there. They're in trouble right now, right? Like,
you're right.
You know what I mean? It was like they were totally fine. I'm not saying they were like a big energy boost or anything like that, but it was just like a neutral performance at 5-on-5.
They definitely clear the liability bar.
Yeah.
It's not a liability when it's on. But I you know, that Predators team, I thought their fourth line mate was like a difference maker
yes.
in that series.
And
the Canucks didn't have that. Now, I don't know if a Derek Ryan Fogel Janmark, fourth line, is going to be a difference maker in the series either, but there's more pop there, right? Fogel's a guy who can play up lineup and really trouble you with his speed and on, so.
And I guess that is the theoretical argument for trying to find a spot for Vasily Podkolzin, is like a guy that has more up line of potential, but it's like, that's all theoretical. He didn't do it. He didn't score a goal in the NHL this year, right? So it's hard for me to buy into, okay, have this extra scoring option that you can move up in the lineup in certain situations where there just hasn't been that production for Vasily Podkolzin.
Yeah. Also, five shots, a minor penalty, and no points in his two Calder Cup playoff games so far, as the Abbotsford Canucks have fallen behind 2-0 to on the Ontario Reign. And when do they play? They play this weekend or this week in Abbotsford. So yes, the series is moving back to home ice. But yeah, the Canucks have told us with their actions that they don't think Podkolzin's ready.
Yeah.
You know, like they did that like audition. Who was it? It was Lindholm for sure. And then who was the other winger with him? Was it PDG or was it Lafferty? And then they rotated both Baines and Podkolzin, got a shot there in the last 20 games of the season. You know what I'm talking about?
With Lindholm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was that like audition line.
Yep.
They had the audition line for the Canucks idol line for, you know, like a 2-week period. And I thought Podkolzin, they needed his heaviness in the lineup when Joshua was out.
Mm-hmm.
And he had flashes. But I just think the Canucks have already told us with their actions that they don't think he's ready.
And again, Phil DiGiuseppe can kill penalties, right? So what is Podkolzin bringing to the table that is going to trump that skill from Phil DiGiuseppe? Like, he doesn't have that edge in his game right now. It's not production. Yes, he's physical. That's great. But is that really enough to outweigh what Phil DiGiuseppe's given you when you're down, right? And especially given the importance that the penalty kill is going to have in this series, like, you're going to have to keep those options that you feel really good about in the lineup. And I think that's what it is for Phil DiGiuseppe. Now, I agree with you with Sam Lafferty that he kind of needs to find that identity in his game, which he's lost a little bit, right? It's probably not going to be offensive. Can you make it that physical element combined with his speed? That would go a long way. But in general, fourth line wasn't a big issue. You'd love to see a little bit more, but I also don't think that's what's going to decide this series against the Oilers. We'll take a break here. We just got some Rick Tocchet practice audio in, so we will play that on the other side, see what Tocchet has to say as his team continues to get prepped for the Edmonton Oilers. Again, game one doesn't go until Wednesday here in Vancouver. Canucks playoff coverage is brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Be a champion on the worksite. Sorry, by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Excuse me. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We'll take a break. Final segment coming up here from Rick Tocchet and more on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and don't miss an episode.
Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. Keep your thoughts coming in. We have some time towards the end of the show here. It is the final segment. But first, Canucks practiced out at UBC today. Let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
With Wednesday start as a coach, I'm sure you love the extra practice time, but some of the guys have talked about wanting to get things going. How do you see the extra time you have here?
I think it helps us get that extra day or two. You know, coming back from Nashville the next day was a long day, so I think that this extra day helps. But that helps because I, you know, given a couple guys, most of the guys 2 days off, I thought the pace was really good today.
Rick, I asked the guys one simple question. We got two different answers. If there's one thing you cannot do against the Oilers, what is it? Z said, turn the puck over. Elias said, take penalties. What's your answer to that? What's the one thing you can't do for both?
Both.
That's it.
Yeah. I might have a third one too, but no. No, I think every coach says that, but especially against this team, you know, they're incredible in the power play and they you know, feed off turnovers. So, I mean, those are two things we have to be good at.
How tough is that? I mean, you know, you did take some penalties in the last round. PK was great, but you've got a defense that likes to step up and be physical. Is it tough to manage that line?
Yeah, no, I want us to be aggressive. I think, you know, for the most part, I think we play a disciplined game. I mean, we had some troubles this year at certain moments. We had some stick penalties and things like that. We've gotten better at it, but we definitely have to be disciplined against this team. But that doesn't mean you back off, and we have to play aggressive. I mean, you know, the refs have been good. I think the refs have been really good. So they want us to play too. I hope.
Z, you talked about the fact there was a lot of excitement with a bunch of guys' first playoff series and maybe some running around, but he thinks that it's a little more calm now and the guys are kind of settled in here being in playoffs. Do you see it that way? Has it got a different feel now?
Yeah, there's a couple of individuals I thought got better as the series went on. Felt more comfortable. Even their demeanor around the rink, I could see they were back to normal. So I think some guys were really tight the first couple of games, and they played tight. And I thought as the series went on, so hopefully this, you know, obviously it's another level. I mean, we're going to have to find another level as a team, and the players have to. But I think the calmness of no one to expect, you know, the loud crowd and, you know, the pressure of playing, I think they're handling a little bit better. It's more experience, right?
Your captain is all about the here and now. What did you learn about him last series?
You know, obviously he took some big hits early, and I thought he didn't really waver. You know, he just kept on going ahead. I love Huggy's, he's a very even keel guy. You know, we won that one game, had a couple assists, you know. I couldn't tell the next day if we won or lost. He's just I think as a captain, he's really learned to be even keel.
You talked about numerous times in the last series about guys moving their feet, getting their feet
going,
and I think that applied to Petey. How much do you think this series, you're playing a team like the Oilers, even though you're going to want to stay in your structure, can maybe bring him back to what we saw before when he's at his best?
Yeah, obviously it's a mindset and there's a lot of physical stuff, but you know you have to know before you get the puck what you want to do, especially against Edmonton. And if you don't move your feet and you throw blind passes, you're dead against Edmonton. So moving your feet will open up options. It'll make the other team defend. It might make the other team take a penalty. So, you know, you got to move your feet and you got to know what you want to do with the puck before you get it.
When it comes to slowing McDavid down off the rush, how much of it starts with your forecheck and maybe disrupting their breakout so you can't get a chance to wind up in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, the best defense is having the puck. So we'd like to hold on pucks. That's why you can't. That's why you got to move your feet. That's why you got to win battles. You got to keep the puck. You can't throw pucks away. You can't stand still. They thrive on that stuff. You got to make them stop and play defense. If they like playing on the move, and if you know, even a shot down the wing, a bad angle shot, missing the net is not a good play. You know, that's why I know around here a lot of, you know, everybody always talks about shots. But if it's not a good shot, don't take it. I don't care about the shot clock. I mean, I want to keep the puck. You throw a puck at the net, a high, hard one, it goes wide. McDavid just picks up the puck and he's gone. So that's a strategy for us is, you know, you cannot throw stupid shots at the net and basically miss the net. I'm not saying don't throw the puck in the net. I'm saying don't miss the net.
You want to stay in your defensive structure, but against the Oilers, 13 goals in a series is probably not going to get it done. You probably need a little bit more offensively. So how do you balance that to be, you know, being able to play that way in this series but still maintain your defense?
Well, I think in the playoffs, every game's different. Every series is different. So you know, I don't know, you know, I the last series is gone. It's a different style of team. Everybody gets a re-rack. So, yeah, I mean, obviously we want to score more goals, but as much as everybody wants to say about national shots and all that stuff, we didn't give them much, and we won in six. So it's a new team, and we'll, you know, we'll see what happens in the first game.
You said re-rack for Petey. Is that a
– I think it's everybody. I think everybody. Everybody starts at zeros again. And for the guys that had a good series, you know, have that confidence to even go. And the guys that maybe didn't feel they had a good series, it's like I said, every start's zero. So, I mean, there's always stories out there every game. Every game is different. You know, somebody scores a game, maybe hasn't had a good game, but it scores a game winner the next, you know, the first game or whatever. It lightens you up for the next game.
You talked about strong games and confidence. I don't know if you're going to tell us, but I'm going to ask anyways. Archer's played so well for you on Friday, three appearances. Do you continue to go with the hot hand? I mean, I don't know how you don't put it back.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's questions that we're going to we'll talk about. But like I said, we don't make decisions till tomorrow late afternoon. So that's when we'll make a decision.
Does the last game in Edmonton have an impact where DeSmith was very good in a 3-1 win, which is probably a better read on the season series?
Well, it's good to have two guys that can, you know, I mean, obviously, Smitty had a great game against Edmonton. He had a great game two against Nashville. So we got capable goalies here.
Rick, with a player like McDavid, do you just trust in your kind of same defensive structure? Do you have to make special concessions? And if so, how do you balance making those special concessions while still keeping what you've been successful with?
Yeah, I think coaching against them the last 5-6 years, knowing some tendencies helps. But, you know, we can't change our whole defense system for McDavid. But there are things that we could do to combat him. But, you know, listen, he's going to get his looks. Hopefully we can contain some of his looks. But, you know, there's nobody better in the league through the neutral zone. I mean, you know, if you backwards skate or you take a bad angle, you're dead. So I think we have to be real disciplined on our angles and the way we handle him.
With all the focus on him and their power play, yeah. Like, how much better do they defend now, though, under Knobloch over the second half or two-thirds of the season? Do you see a difference?
Well, I just see a team that's, I mean, they've obviously gelled their last, you know, 50, 60 games. They play as five-man units. Obviously, they defend. They defend really well, but, you know, they have the puck a lot, you know, so that's a reason why they defend really well. And I think they have a balanced team. I think their fourth line, third line are capable lines. They're good. They have a lot of good depth. And I think Knobloch's done an unreal job. You know, I don't think he overplays McDavid during the regular season. I mean, there are some games he plays 20, 21 minutes, and I think that helped that team. I think he did a hell of a job.
As much as you talked about shots and Nashville, do you feel like you got back to your game quality-wise the last two, like, got some traction, like double-digit high danger by some of the proprietary numbers? Do you feel like you sort of got back to that?
I felt we did because I thought some guys were moving their feet a little bit better. I really do. For whatever reason, you know, was it nerves? Was it, you know, not trusting things and playing it safe? I don't know. But I thought that game, we had a little bit more motion. There was a little bit more aggressiveness with the puck.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet looking ahead to the Edmonton series, as he noted off the top there at practice at UBC today. Rest helps, getting a couple extra days here after getting back from Nashville, and he said there was a good pace at practice. So the thing that I found most interesting in that commentary from Rick Tocchet was when he said, you know, everyone talks about shots, you know, Nashville was limiting you so much, but then also really, really stressing how selective he wants the team to be against Edmonton, right? Because, you know, if you're coming down the wing on the rush and you've got a wrist shot, if that misses the net and takes the wrong angle, that could be rimming around the boards and igniting Edmonton's rush the other way. And we know how dangerous they are on the rush, you know, even going as far to say, right, like you can't throw stupid shots at the net. And I think that's going to be such an interesting needle for the Canucks to try to thread, is recognizing that they're going to have to generate more. They're going to have to score more to beat Edmonton while also playing their game of being very, very careful with the puck, right, and not giving Edmonton those turnovers that just feed their neutral zone game and get them going off the rush. I think that's a very difficult balance to find, but I think Rick Tocchet's 100% right. Like, number one, play in their zone. Yes, then you have to find ways to break them down and generate those scoring chances, but I think he's right to place the priority on let's just get the puck in their zone, not make stupid plays, and look for those high-quality shots when we can get them.
Yeah, and you saw it in Game 5. Game 5 was where the Canucks kept missing wide.
Mm-hmm.
And that was partially the, like, slap pass over adjustment. Remember the brief slap pass discussion we had in this market?
The slap pass discourse? Yep.
Yeah. Good God.
It's the playoffs, baby. Well, we did, like, a whole segment on Archer Shelov's shirt.
I mean, we should have. Look, at the end of the day, I'd rather do slap pass discourse than...
I will absolutely not apologize for anything we talk about in the playoffs. Like, this is what it is. You get hyper focused.
Slap Pass Discourse is the title of the podcast.
Yeah, Slap Pass Discourse is better, though, than I think what awaits us in this series, which is going to be penalty discourse and, like, can you believe this kid said some stupid things? And, like, man, I'm not.
I am so out on the social media. Like, I could not care less. It's like, did you see that this Canucks fan said? It's like, I don't care.
It's like, did
I don't care.
I see, Jamie, if you need me to, I will clutch your pearls for you.
No, I'm not a big pearl clutcher. No. Not a big pearl clutcher.
Dom wants to chime in. Dom, chime in.
No, it's fine.
Come on.
Well, no,
can't do that now.
Give us your hot take.
No, there's no hot take.
You can't hover over the mic.
I was
like going to
say something,
talk.
And then you guys went off about, you know,
clutching pearls,
being profane, and I was caught listening.
What did you want to say?
I forget.
That's how you get the 32 thoughts job, kids. It's contributions like that.
It obviously wasn't that important.
No.
It couldn't have been that important.
Anyway. Fans are jerks.
Yeah. Fans say silly things sometimes. Yeah, it's all right. We'll all be okay.
I don't know what to tell you.
We don't have to overreact to it.
Or we can. I mean, whatever.
Whatever. I get it. It's like the emotional hothouse
Jamie,
rivalry.
You're the problem.
What? I get that. I'm not going to like rip fans for partaking in it, but it's just I don't care about it. It's not high on my list of like things I'm excited about for this series.
No, well,
you know what I mean?
I'm telling you right now, the discourse on diving, embellishment, and penalties is going to be so nauseating. I'm like stealing myself in advance. I'm so, because honestly, it felt like every game of the first round, there was some controversy that I just like, I couldn't see it. I didn't understand like the Besser follow through.
Mm.
That wasn't a follow through. Like that's not continuing. Like, I don't know what people are watching.
It's the playoffs.
I know.
Emotions run high.
But the stick wasn't high because he was playing the puck.
But like, are you really surprised that people are upset about a call that went against their team in a pivotal game? Of course they are. That's what happens.
I know. It's just.
And to me, that's the same. This is the same thing as like fans saying something stupid on social media. It's like it is a total non-story. Do you know what I mean?
Just don't defend the indefensible.
All right.
That's my view of it anyway. Anyway, sorry.
Shot selection.
Yeah. So we saw it in game five where the Canucks were missing wide and you know, the worst type of miss, and Talkett alluded to it, is the far side miss that also works to exit the zone for your opponent. And the Canucks had like three of them in the first period of game. It was the only time, well, there were two times in that series against the Predators where I was watching it thinking, hey, maybe this moment's a little bit too big for this team, right? Because for the most part, I thought their composure was through the roof. But I did think game two, right, the way that, and I think having lost Demko, right, that blow, like it just felt like the game kind of got away from them. They had that long shift that led directly after the Pettersson giveaway to the third goal for Nashville. Like just like little uncharacteristic mistakes, things that weren't Canucks hockey. And then I thought you saw a little bit more of that in game five where some of the puck management decisions and some of the shot selection was way off of the very like regimented, disciplined way that this team plays. One thing about a team that reliably plays the game a certain way is that they, and I don't mean this in the pejorative sense, but there's like a predictability to what it looks like when they're off. You know, and it's sometimes like really subtle things and it's just like, whoa, no, that's not how they play. That's not how they succeed. They succeed on such a, you know, I don't want to say a word like formulaic, but it's like there's such a predictable set of principles underneath, undergirding their form.
I don't think that's a pejorative. Like, I think Rick Tocchet has spoken about, you know, we need to play predictable, right? Because then that reduces the mental load. Like, you know where the other guy is going to be. You know what you have to do to get him the puck. It just makes it so much simpler, right?
I come back to Tanner Pearson. Like, JT Miller also asked about what a line mate, like, you asked JT Miller, what does Pew Suter bring to your line? He's predictable. And the first thing, Tanner Pearson once described to me as stupid smart hockey. And I love that description, and I'll always use it. Like, it's such a good way of looking at it and framing it. So, you know, again, because this team plays such a specific brand of hockey, when they're not playing it, it always stands out to me. It always feels And game two and game five, I thought you could feel it just a little bit. It happens to be the two games they lost. And in every other moment in the series, they were like completely game. Even if they didn't play well, they were in control emotionally. You know, they were in the moment and playing well even when they weren't. And so, you know, I think that's what Tockett's getting at and probably thinking about, right? Is with this team, if we miss those shots, it's a grade A the other way. And we can't have that.
Well, and I even think when you're playing against Edmonton and you know how much they can score, the temptation to get away from some of your principles is going to be high, right? Like the temptation to think, I have to go out and try to make a home run play here. How many times has Rick Tockett spoken about that throughout the course of the season, right? Like, hey, sometimes like when the Canucks play bad games, one of his frequent lines was, you know, guys are trying to win the game with one shift. And I think that temptation probably looms large when you're going against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. When you know you might have to do something spectacular to keep up with the scoring pace they can set. And I think really interesting to hear Rick Tockett just stress, hold on to the puck in the offensive zone, right? One of the great sports cliches, the best offense is a good defense. I think it's flip it around for this series for the Canucks. The best defense is a good offense, right? The best defense is holding the puck in the Oilers zone for as long as humanly possible. Yes, it needs to result in scoring chances and shots and goals, obviously, but I get where Rick Tockett's coming from, saying like, just because we're going against the high octane Oilers, you can't all of a sudden get too aggressive, get too silly with the puck, get too careless with the puck, because that's just going to make it even harder to hang in these games with them. And again, I come back to Quinn Hughes' deployment, right? And where his minutes are going to have to be. Like, if you're going to make it a reality that you are setting up shop for long, long stretches in the Canucks or in the Edmonton offensive zone or the Edmonton defensive zone, I should say, like, Quinn Hughes gives you the best chance to do that. I think Quinn Hughes is going to be vital against the Oilers' top players, but I think he's just going to have to play an awful lot to make it a reality, to make what Rick Tockett's talking about there, where you can be in the zone with the puck for a long time, to make that a reality. It's going to have to be Quinn Hughes playing a huge role.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. And, like, Quinn, because I think the other subtext to what Tockett's talking about, right, is the idea of how your puck decisions impact what you surrender, right? The holistic nature of hockey is a dynamic game where you are always both attacking and defending all at once, right? Even when you have the puck, you know, the way the Canucks defend, like a big reason why the Canucks are so good defensively is the amount of zone time they generate, right? The amount of time they just hold the puck.
And because they're relatively conservative in that zone time, they don't give the puck away a lot in those situations,
right? They just grind you down and they grind clock. And especially when they have the lead, it gets super frustrating. And then you get tired. And then they're peppering you with shots through layered traffic. And they have fresher bodies than you. And they're more likely to pounce on the loose puck. And it just sort of snowballs, right? That's how the Canucks are trying to play. And Quinn Hughes is the catalyst, right? Like, how many of those heavy shifts start where it's like Quinn Hughes and everyone else changes? So many of them. So many of them. He's also the one man answer to any forechecking problem you have, like any problems on the breakout. Hughes can solve them. And then, you know, we know what he's become as an attacking option too for this team. And that's, you know, that's the other part of this. I know that a lot of Canucks fans don't have a lot of respect for Stuart Skinner or the Oilers defense, but you need to generate enough that it matters. You know, like right now,
you need to punish them.
When people are talking about Nashville as this stout defensive team, and they're not bad, but that's like, I know the CSA metrics, like the ClearSight analytics that measure the shot quality on and the defensive, like they had Nashville as like one of the 20 bottom 10 defensive teams in terms of the actual quality they're surrendering, no matter what the rates are. The Oilers are better. Like the Oilers are a better defensive team than Nashville is and have way more finishing talent. So, you know, this Canucks team's going to need to really generate more. That to me is honestly the biggest concern coming out of the first round. It's, I know what this team can do as a lockdown defensive group. Like, I know what this team can do with JT Miller on the ice. Like, those are the minutes that they can score in. If Miller, my concerns about this series basically amount to, if Miller has to duel McDavid, do you get enough offense? Do you get enough offense given how much energy is going to have to be expended, not getting torched by the best hockey playing human on the planet from your one sort of line that's reliably scoring right now. That to me is sort of it. And I think this all dovetails. It's all sort of the same cocktail, right? If the Canucks can generate zone time and if they can make the right decisions, can they muddy this game up?
Yeah.
And they don't have to muddy up the whole series. They don't have to shut down the Oilers. They have to muddy it up for like three or four games. And if you can turn three or four games into a one-shot game, hey, then that plus 220, 30% probability of advancing, then that script's in play.
If you can make three or four games look like that Nashville series. Absolute slogs.
I don't know about that. Maybe that's a high bar.
That's a high bar.
That was bumper car hockey in the extreme. I don't think this series will look like that.
I went from being really disappointed in the like quality of play in that series early to just like massive respect for the heart of the two teams in that series and the effort they were putting forth.
I also think it was very interesting to me because the series was aesthetically dreadful at times. And then in the last five periods, it actually got fun. It actually became really interesting hockey to me. And that was the moment when everyone started criticizing both teams for playing unattractive hockey. It was like the criticism started just at the moment that the teams
that
actually
ended.
Started. Well, the last five periods of that series, both teams were like attacking over 200 feet of ice and there was actually skill. Like there were good scoring chances in that game six. It's just that both goaltenders were on one. Like that game was by far the most interesting game. And all of a sudden everyone's calling it like Irish football because it's 0-0. And it's like, no, Saros and Seelovs are crushing it tonight. And this is awesome. Like that was a fun game. It wasn't miserable hockey. Some of that series was, but the moment the public started calling it miserable hockey, I was like, no, this is good. What are you talking about? What are you guys watching?
Well, plus it's an elimination game, right? And it's close. And it's just, how can you not enjoy that?
But I'm
at
just
a certain level.
I'm for sure. But I'm just talking pure aesthetics. Aesthetically. Mm-hmm. I thought the last five periods of that series were actually quite fun.
Okay, that's going to do it for us today on the show. Thank you for texting in. We've got two more whole shows to preview this big second round matchup with the Edmonton Oilers. By the way, the NHL has officially announced the game time for game three. Previously only the first two had been set. Game three will go at 6:30 Pacific time in Edmonton. So that's this Sunday, Mother's Day, 6:30 start time for game three in Edmonton. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.